You're listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance-off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there. This is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gilp.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool. I mean, Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff. This is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics.
Hello, hello, hello.
Just two of us today.
There's just two of us. I'm Martin.
Dan.
That's it.
Together, we're Dartin.
This is a 100% less table-banging show than we're normally used to.
Probably 75% less opinion.
Well, we'll see if we can fix that.
Yeah. Well, I have no opinions on anything.
Hey, we got our fourth host problems resolved.
We do, apparently.
We do, apparently. But I'm not going to make too much of an announcement just in case.
Okay.
So we'll let that be a surprise. But yeah, we've got a fourth host again, and so that might make some of these two-man shows go a little bit easier, a little bit better, a little smoother, a little more opinion. So we're kind of happy about that. But in the meantime, it's just you and me, Dan. Today, Friday.
Yes.
Comic books. So last week we were talking about some stuff, a bunch of gibberish and stuff, and we ran out of time to talk about a project you're involved in. What's that all about?
A project I'm involved in. You're supposed to wait till I pulled this up on the internet there.
On the interwebs.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm phoneless now, so I'm like 90% bad about... We're basically
like living in a cave right now because you don't have your phone.
What's with all these percentages? Anyways, I usually have an opportunity to like scan and look stuff up, and I don't, so I'm going to sound dumber than I usually am.
Okay. I will sound the exact same because I just look stuff up on the computer here.
Perfect. So your project.
Like my project that I'm looking up currently.
Kickstarter. We love Kickstarters here at Hey Kids Comics. And
yes.
If you go to heykidscomics.ca at the bottom of the page, you'll always notice our favorite Kickstarter at that moment. This happens to be down there, and there's a reason why it's down there. Why is that?
Because I am involved in it.
Yay!
I wrote a little story that's in this comic book. It's the comic's called The Astonishing Gear Shift, and it's by Anthony Owens, who has worked with some of our other favorite Canadian creators.
Yes, yes.
Doing some work and stuff for them, some prints and whatnot for other. Comic book Kickstarters.
I do have to tell everybody out there that if you're going on Kickstarter and you're looking for this, Gear Shift is spelled with like a 3 and a 1.
G
kind of weird.
A R S H 1 F T. I said F-T.
Yeah. F-T. So if you have trouble following that or whatever, again, just head to heykidscomics.ca, bottom of the page. Our favorite Kickstarter will take you straight there.
So basically, it's a family friendly comic that's about a. Lazy superhero who likes coffee and he fights bad guys and stuff.
Except for the superhero part in fighting bad guys, it sounds like me.
You like coffee?
Oh gosh, do I ever.
Okay. Yeah, and so the comic's actually made up of three stories. The first one is The Astonishing Gear Shift. That's by Anthony. He did the art and wrote that one. And then there's The Amazing Ant, which is... story that I wrote and Anthony did the art for, and then another one, The Inferior Foes of Gear Shift, that Anthony did.
So let me throw my interviewing hat on here and start with...
I'm on the spot here.
Hello there, Dan Collins, writer of The Amazing Ant.
Hi, I'm Marty.
What makes the ant so amazing?
He can do stuff.
the Amazing Ant, this is his kind of like debut. Anthony has put up a few little comics on the internet and stuff involving some of these characters. And the ant is like, he's basically like a kind of rebellious, funny teenager who accidentally got shrunk down to the size of an ant and is stuck that way.
Excellent.
And he lives in a milk carton in the park.
There you go. Now, I can't help but notice that it says Great North Comics in the top corner.
It does say Great North Comics.
We know another Great North Comics title, don't we?
We do. That would be Auric.
So that's kind of cool, being part of the same publishing family as Auric.
It is kind of cool.
There you go.
I was really excited when I found out about that.
There you go.
And so now we just need to get it funded so we can get this thing published.
So go save your Tim Hortons money. The hockey card promotion's over, so you're not buying extra hockey cards at Timmy's. Save a few dollars. Go to the website. Support this, because it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
And then buy 6 copies, one for you, one for your friends, one for your kids, one for your friends' kids.
One for the guy down the street.
Because it is a good, like, family-aimed comic.
There you go. Well, I wouldn't have expected any other from you, being a big Scooby-Doo fan. I feel like that's something you're good at, so should be fun.
As long as it's not Gear Shift Apocalypse.
Gear Shift in the Ramones versus Predator or something.
Yeah, but, yeah. Anyways. So, Excited to see what happens with this.
Excellent, excellent. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Kickstarters, another Kickstarter of ours, Die Kitty Die. No, yeah. I should say not a Kickstarter of ours.
One that we
favorite
support,
Kickstarter
yes.
of ours. Die
One
Kitty
that
Die.
Some of us support.
There you go. Has surpassed another stretch goal. So they went through the one stretch goal of switching everybody from a soft cover to a hardcover. They went to another stretch goal of adding a Giselle Lugosi story. So mm-hmm. there's going to be a little extra story in the second volume, just like there was in the first. Then they surpassed that stretch goal and went to another one to fund a summer special.
Yep.
And they exceeded that. So they went to another. You see a trend here.
I do see a trend that they're like just killing it.
They're doing well. So there's another stretch goal for a Christmas special. So there's going to be a Christmas special. Now you got to pay for the summer special and the Christmas special separately, but it's like $7 with shipping, which is a great price for a comic. And there's two different covers, and there's a sketch cover and all this other stuff. So you can go to the Kickstarter for Die Kitty Die and see all of that sort of stuff. And they went to another stretch goal of free bookmarks for everybody. So there'll be a bunch of bookmarks featuring Die Kitty Die and some of the other characters. And the next stretch goal is a coloring book.
Which I think they beat.
That'd be awesome.
Because I think that was for 50,000.
What, really? They've already beat that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like the actually, Marty, by the time most people hear this show, Kickstarter will be over. It ends like tonight sometime.
Yeah, so hurry. Hurry. If you are in the Peterborough area
if you're
and you're
listening
to this live, you have no excuse. Go to the computer. If you're one of those guys who sits there all weekend long going, when is Marty going to get off his butt and get this uploaded to the website, then I'm sorry.
It's too late for you.
It's too late. But you
should have donated last week.
You've probably already donated, right?
But I'm pretty sure that...
she ends pretty quick. Yeah. Anyways, so that's good to hear. And that's going to be funding... issues 5, 6, 7, and 8, which is going to be distributed as PDFs to everybody, and then the hardcover volume. I'm sure that Chapter House, they mentioned on the thing that Chapter House is going to be doing the publishing, so Chapter House is going to print out that volume too. So if you did miss the Kickstarter, you can always pick it up at,
or if you're lazy like I am,
at comic conventions and stuff. I'm sure it's going to be solicited through Diamond, just like the first volume was. So, and of course, issues 5, 6, 7, and 8 will be published by Kickstarter monthly as individual issues
by
Chapter House. So that'll be good. I love me some Chapter House comics, you know that.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like Die Kitty Die, I would say Die Kitty Die is probably one of, I would call it like my favorite surprise comic.
Oh, yeah?
Because I didn't think, I'm not an Archie guy. I've never read a single Archie comic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Not an Archie guy, but picked up the hardcover at the Fan Expo to support Dan and Fernando. And because you guys are both fans, I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy it. I know it'll be okay. And then I read it and I was like, this is great.
There you go.
So,
see, it's kind of weird because I have no specific recollection of reading Archie, Casper, Richie Rich, some of the other, like Sabrina Teenage Witch as a kid. And yet, I know the stories, and I know the characters, and when they spoof those characters in Die Kitty Die, I get the joke, I'm laughing. So at some point in time, I was reading those comics. I don't have any copies of them in my collection.
I think Sam comes over to your house at night and reads to you while you're sleeping.
There you go, reads to me subconsciously.
And so, you know it all.
So I'm thinking maybe it was my sister's comics. She used to get the funny books, and I used to get the superhero books, and I would read anything. Like I'm not very selective that way as far as comics go. When I was a kid, I'd read anything. You know, there would be certain types of books that I'd prefer to buy, but if somebody put a comic book in front of my face, it could have been anything. I mean, it could have been a Scooby-Doo, a Harvey. It didn't matter. I'd read it. So I'm beginning to think that might be where it is that, you know, every time I got a superhero book, my little sister got, Scamp from Disney or something like this, and I ended up reading
that. I have
that
one.
But I just seem to recall, maybe it was like Richie Rich Digests or something. There just seems to be like this faint recollection of reading a heck of a lot of Richie Rich comics.
I haven't read a Richie Rich comic ever.
No. So that's fun. I guess that Richie Rich kind of faded away, didn't it?
he did.
Oh, well.
But I love the spoofs in Die Kitty Die, obviously.
It's hilarious.
That's really the fun of it.
It is a hilarious satire about the entire comic industry, everything. And if you know the two creators, Dan and Fernando, and some of their little exploits and stuff when Archie changed and shifted their focus, the commentary is just spot on and hilarious and bitingly funny, and it just really is a fun comic book. And if you don't get those jokes, it's almost like a Pixar movie, right? The kids appreciate a Pixar movie on one level, and then the adults appreciate it on another.
For sure.
So the casual comic book reader, I'm not going to say kids because, you know,
it's a little
Die Kitty Die is a little bit spicy. But your casual reader gets the comic book on a certain level. Somebody familiar with the other characters gets on a different level. Somebody who's familiar with the inside going ons and some of the backroom deals gets it on another level. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really, really a fun book. And obviously everybody's loving it because the Kickstarter just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, right? It's doubled it because their original goal was around like $25,000.
Yeah, and they're
so now it's at 50.
They're at
give 50, or take.
50 give or take and ending later on today. So it should be good. That should be fun.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if there's still more Die Kitty Die after this.
Oh, for sure.
But the success of this, because you don't just stop making something when it's a wild success.
Yeah, and it's kind of neat the way they're doing it, right? They're doing kind of like the Dark Horse model of let's release four books as a series and get that arc out. Regroup, get the other four issues, get them done, publish them, regroup, you know? So you're never kind of... I hate to, sling out negative examples, but like Southern Bastards comic book from Image, it was like, here's a taste of it every month, and then nothing, and 3 months later we'll give you one issue, and then nothing for two-ish months, and then we'll give you three in a row, and then nothing, and you're just sitting there going, what happened next?
And that leads a lot of people to want to just read the trades or collected versions
exactly.
when it's all done, rather than paying for it monthly.
But if you can pump out the arc in one coherent monthly, then everybody I think appreciates that. So I really like the way they're going about the publishing. Because Die Kitty Die number one came out from Chapter House for those that weren't involved in the Kickstarter and didn't get the hardcover, didn't get the PDF. So that came out this month from Chapter House, and I saw quite a few people looking for that book and picking it up, and that was great. Some decent word of mouth. I was slightly disappointed to see that of the three comic shops that Sam and I stopped at, one had a ton of copies, which was fantastic. The other two had none. None whatsoever. Now, I'm not sure if maybe they had some pre-orders, and that was it.
Yeah.
But on the shelf Wednesday, they didn't have any, which I was kind of disappointed about. So who knows, maybe everybody in that area just knew which comic shop to go to, because Comic Book Addiction in Whippy had tons of copies. It was awesome.
I was gonna say, well, between you and me and like some other people, they probably have a certain Chapter House quota
oh yeah
where they just know to bring in Chapter House stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fun.
I almost just went in one day and said, just give me like cover A of every Chapter House comic.
There you go.
But I was like, no, I feel kind of unsafe doing that.
Well, see, I'm a bit of a moron when it comes to that. I did tell them to give me at least one of every single Chapter House book.
Yeah.
And all the Captain Canuck ones, I want two of every cover. So for my little collection there. So yeah, I've got a few copies. So speaking of Chapter House, another book's coming out. Two new books, actually, in January. Freelance, which I think we chatted about a little bit.
A little bit, yep.
And the other one is Agents of Pact.
Agents of Pact.
Agents of Pact. So I write reviews for First Comics News, and one of my fellow reviewers there did an interview with Kalman and Dafrovsky. You know, I keep saying that as a Pole, I should be able to pronounce this right, and I think I just butchered it, so I'm not even going to try again. And Blake Northcott. PACT is the Paranormal Activity Containment Team.
I actually didn't know what that stood for until right now, so there we go.
Well, for the longest time, I kept seeing everybody writing PACK, P-A-C-K, yes. And I'm like, no, that's Big nope. Jim. That is not Chapter House, so that's where Sam got confused.
Yeah.
But PACT was a 70s team in the Chapter House universe that was set up to investigate unknown phenomenon, strange things, X-Files type stuff,
yeah.
UFOs, supernatural. But they closed down in the 80s. PACT has been reinstated to investigate the new unknowns and supernaturals, which are superheroes. So people like Northgard and Captain Canuck and Mr. Gold and stuff like this, except that since PACT is part of the team, Northgard is actually part of, he is an agent of PACT, so I feel like they're not going to be investigating him. but you never know.
Northgard, are you like up to no good? No. Okay, yeah,
Check him off the list. So Redcoat in Quebec, the neat thing about this comic book is it's going to focus on some of the female characters within the Chapter House universe, bring them to the foreground, which is kind of cool. So Redcoat in Quebec are going to be part of the team. Marla Ritchie, who's appeared in Captain Canuck and the Northgard comics, she's going to be on the team. Manon Deschamps is the director of PACT. And, of course, Northgard's a character in the comic book as well. They did ask the question on what is the status of Captain Canuck in the comic book, and Kalman said that would be a massive spoiler for the events of Captain Canuck number 11. So I feel like something intriguing is going to happen in the Chapter House universe in Captain Canuck 11.
Well, even like Northgard number 1 is set after Captain Canuck number 11.
Yeah.
So
it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
When are we getting number 11?
Yeah, exactly.
And number 10.
And that's coming out January 25th with a regular and a sketch cover, which is kind of neat. So yeah, Agents of PACT. So the Chapter House universe continues on. I have actually heard some... Oh, I shouldn't even say anything. I've heard some scuttlebutt about Chapter House, so I actually know the answers to those two questions, but I don't think I'm allowed to.
I don't want any spoilers.
I don't think I'm allowed to say. Let's just say that the books will be coming out ASAP, and it'll be worth the wait.
Okay.
It'll be very cool. And in the meantime, we have Freelance and Agents of PACT to keep us entertained and amused. And then there's the next two little mini-series coming after that. So that'll be good. So lots of fun stuff from Chapter House, I think, anyways. And, of course, you know, if you're looking for back issues of Chapter House books, chapterhousecomics.ca, I think, is the website. If not, just Google it. And you can get all the back issues and stuff like this. Some of the Die Kitty Die.
Or just go to a convention.
Or go to a convention, and the boys love chatting it up, so that'll be fun. So that's Agents of PACT.
I was going to say, when we were talking, you segued too smoothly, because I was going to talk about a Kickstarter that I had supported that's out.
Yeah, fire away.
And that is Happily Ever After.
Yes.
Spelt AFTR for that, from Ricky Lima.
That's
and
right.
Please forgive me because I forget the artist's name, but Ricky wrote the comic. And I met Ricky and another fine gentleman, Shane Heron, at Fan Expo. And they worked together on the Black Hole Hunters Club, which is a really cool, like, black and white comic set. Kind of like, it's like a space thing and, like, obviously black holes. And, like, I'm just butchering it, but it's great.
There you go. And I supported that one too.
I was intrigued by the cover, which had a quote from Adam Gorman that said, "Too much swearing." So I was in at that point. And so, yeah, you should check out that one. But Ricky has another project he was working on, Happily Ever After, which is basically about a princess who has been kidnapped and confined to a tower, like sort of like Rapunzel. And she's trying to get saved by using dating apps in order to get knights to come in and like fight the guy who's keeping her prisoner. And so that one, the Kickstarter is over. It got funded, but yeah. he put out the digital copy for the people who backed the Kickstarter a couple of weeks ago.
Really? Because I backed it up. I must have missed the email.
Maybe you did.
Oh no!
But
I'll have to look that up.
I've been meaning to read it for like a couple of weeks, and I tried once, and then my computer crashed or something, and then I finally got around to reading it a few days ago, and it was pretty good.
Excellent.
Kind of like an Adventure Time story. It kind of reminds me of Adventure Time, but like more adult, because like they're swearing and heads being lopped off and stuff. But
no,
it still like looks like an Adventure Time-ish thing.
I'm a big, huge fan of the physical copies. So I know for sure that whatever level I supported it at, there's a physical copy coming my way. So I might just wait for that to show up.
And it seems like they should be shipping soon.
Excellent.
Because I know they actually have physical copies for sale. He was posting on Facebook that he's got physical copies, like, excellent, for the shows and stuff he goes to.
So
and I was going to wait for the physical copy, but then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give this one more try. Screamed at my computer a whole bunch. Stuff I can't repeat on the radio. Eventually it worked, and I got to read the comics. So
Cool. Yeah see, I got a little bit of a love-hate relationship with digital comics. I keep trying, but it's just not the same.
No.
It's just not the same. Like, I got a really nice Samsung tablet, high resolution, tons of memory. You know, this thing displays them, and it's great. They look fine. But I have trouble with the organization of them and, you know, downloading this, not downloading that. I'm a bit of a tinker, so I keep wiping my tablet and installing new stuff. And then I have to re-download the comics from Comixology and stuff. So I was thinking of trying that Marvel Unlimited for a little while. I don't know if you've had any experience with that.
It's hilarious that you mentioned this, because I have literally been trying to get onto Marvel Unlimited for the past 3 days, but they don't want to take my money.
Yeah.
I keep trying to get a profile and having it stall on me.
That seems a bit weird.
Yes.
I think you need
again,
to
it could
find
be
a,
my computer.
Yeah, I think you need to find a computer tech. I don't know where you're going to find that.
I don't know where I would find one in this room.
And but see if he can fix you up. But I know I was a member of Marvel Unlimited about a year ago. And they're talking about adding some changes to it as of November, some new titles and stuff. And Marvel Unlimited is kind of like the Netflix version of Marvel Comics. There's a certain library of comics there. You pay a monthly fee. You can read as many as you want, as often as you want. You can have 6 downloaded on your computer or your tablet for offline reading, which is a bit of a limitation.
Yeah.
But as long as you got an internet connection, you're solid the way you go. I kind of like Comixology a little bit better in that regards, that you can download a whole whack of stuff on your tablet, a whole bunch of books, and take it with you. So if you're flying to down south somewhere or on a holiday or something, you can load your tablet just right chock full.
Yeah.
With the Marvel Unlimited, you're kind of stuck at 6 issues. But I think that could also be 6 trade paperbacks, because they sell trades. Like, they have trades there too. I'm not 100% sure on that, so don't quote me on that one. So, I mean, it seems like it's interesting enough. I know when I had it, I didn't use it that much, which seems like a shame. But given the number of trade paperbacks I buy, like those Marvel Epic collections and stuff, maybe it'd be better, more economical to do that. I don't know.
I know I sampled it for a month.
Yeah.
And I used it a decent amount. And it's good for, you can read newish comics, like up to stuff that's 6 months old. But I was also reading like some older comics too. Like, it's stupid, but like I was reading the comics that I have slabbed. So I would go on to
that's
that.
That's not stupid. I mean, just because you got them slabbed, you got to enjoy them too, right? So
yeah.
That's a neat way of reading some of the collector comics that you got that you're trying to preserve.
Yes, because I have some comics that are nice and they're slabbed, and I'm not going to open them up. I'm not one of those guys.
Shh. I love opening slabs. It's my favorite.
So yeah, I was reading like some old like Daredevil comics and like the first appearance of Ghost Rider and that kind of stuff on there, and then Sam has really been sort of like going on about how much he's enjoyed Civil War.
Yep.
And I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll just sign up again and read some and just binge, because as you said before, you know, you might be picky about what you buy, but you'll read anything.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was just thinking, you know what? If it's in front of me, who cares if I'm reading something that I wouldn't buy?
Oh,
you know?
Exactly.
And it's kind of worth it to keep up on exactly what's happening just to know, even if you are 6 months behind.
Yeah, like if it's $10 a month, I'd be reading all the Marvel books that came out on Marvel Unlimited, the new ones.
Yeah, and so I've been like I spent probably a half an hour trying to get onto the Marvel Unlimited site and have it work, and it wasn't really working for me.
I seem to remember when I signed up that I was supposed to get like a collector action figure or something like that, and it never showed up, and I got angry and I kind of whined and complained, and then I looked at the fine print and it said something like, you know, the promotions are not available in Canada and stuff like this. So I signed up and I didn't get any of that stuff, so I was a bit angry about that.
And now they won't let you back.
Well, I'm sure they'll let me back. I just gotta give them a credit card number. So, I mean, Comixology is trying something similar called, surprisingly, Comixology Unlimited. And it's, at least I think that's what it's called. I could be wrong. And it's only in the U.S., though. You can't get it in Canada. I mean, if you have a U.S. credit card, which isn't that hard to obtain, then you can do that. But you have to have a U.S. address and stuff like this. Anybody who's used to pirating Hulu or how should I say, not pirating, but bypassing the restrictions of getting Hulu and American Netflix in Canada can probably figure out how to get a Comixology Unlimited account up here. But it's, you know, a lot of goofing around and stuff. So maybe when that becomes available in Canada, we'll try that. I don't know. I just like I said, it's a love-hate relationship with digital comics. I like having the physical books in my hand.
I like the price for like Marvel Unlimited.
Yeah.
Being able to read however much you want. Like there's literally so many comics there that you can't read them all, right? They might not interest you, but you can't read them all.
Oh, there's like, some
hundreds
stuff
of
there.
Thousands of comics in that. To choose from,
yeah, there's
comics from the past 50
there.
Years,
and that's where the Epic collections are coming, right? They're digitizing and recoloring all these classic comics, and they'll do a run, publish it in Marvel Unlimited and then Comixology. Then they just take those digital files, combine it into a volume, and print it.
Yeah,
so that's where all the new Epic collections are coming out. So, I mean, you know, anything that I have in print in Epic collection, you've got available to you in Marvel Unlimited. So that's awesome. But yeah, I don't know, man. I just, like, I grab a comic book and my eye flows across the page and different pieces of the art catch me and I'm looking at two pages at once, and if I want to look at something closer or further, the eye does all the moving.
Yeah.
When I'm on the tablet, depending on the service I'm using, double pages sometimes get messed up, or the tablet, you got to look at it in portrait mode, and then when it goes to a double page spread, you got to flip it to landscape mode. Then there's that guided view that takes you panel by panel, and I just...
See, I kind of like the guided view when I was using my much, much, much smaller tablet than yours. But, like, there is nothing better than actually having that comic in your hand, because I like looking at the ads even.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
for
like,
sure.
And especially even going back, like, having a collection of, say, like, the original Captain Canuck run, I'm reading that, but then I pick out the comics, and I'm flipping through, and I'm seeing, like, great things that are, like, cool ads and stuff, little bits here and there.
For those Captain Canuck pajamas that everyone wanted?
You know, it's all the extra little things that you see when you're flipping through an old comic that make it really cool.
Exactly.
Not just the story.
Exactly, and you miss all that with the digital, and I guess, see, I'm from the age where when somebody made an album, that's a black rubbery disky thing for restoring music for you young hipsters that now are back into it and are driving prices of back records up. They would have like a theme record, the album would have a theme. It would have a story. And the tracks were played in a certain order in order to make this story happen, right? And I feel like a comic book is like that. It has to be read in a certain way. And then when you start doing this guided view where it's just popping this panel out, but you don't get to see the rest of the panels that might be interacting with that
yeah.
panel, it's almost like you're listening to music on an iPod. You're hearing them out of order, or
it's on shuffle.
It's on shuffle, or you're missing something. You're missing that tangible experience. And I don't know. I
would agree with that. That's the only. The guided view works well when you have a small tablet.
Oh yeah,
it brings
for sure.
It brings the like panel up, so it's easier to view. But it does. There was a few times where I would have to go out of it because I'm like, they messed it up and put me on the wrong panel first.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that kind of stuff.
And those kind of glitches, again, it takes you out of, like, when I'm reading a comic book, I'm being immersed in that story. If it's a good comic book, if the art's great and the story's great, I'm being immersed in that. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, you're being popped out of the experience by this digital kind of, I don't know. And maybe I'm just old and I'm whining.
There's a comet coming for us dinosaurs here.
Oh, yeah. You know.
To take out the dinosaurs who don't believe in digital.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but I don't like, know. It's just not for me.
Wouldn't you agree that, like, one of the greatest pleasures reading a comic is the buildup of the story and then flipping the page for like a double page spread.
Yeah.
That's like the payoff. Yeah.
Exactly. Getting surprised by that double page payoff. And it goes even a little bit further for me too, because and I know I got well deserved, good natured ribbing for this, but when I read Andrew Shea Hahn's not Battle Rally. Which one was it? I'm sure it was the G-Men.
The Homeless G-Men.
I'm pretty sure it was the G-Men issue one. Yes, it was definitely G-Men issue one. Homeless G-Men issue number one. He had that printed on, like, the nicest paper.
Yeah.
It was buttery and smooth, and I could feel it in my fingers. And I'm reading this comic book, constantly being distracted by how awesome the paper feels. And I had to actually, like, it sounds weird, but I had to sit down a little bit and just kind of like caress the book a little bit because it felt so cool. And then I got it out of my system and I could read the comic. So, I mean, yeah, there's just something about it. It's just, I don't know, because I'm sure album heads were saying this about audio cassettes and cassette heads were saying this about CDs and, you know, but like people are going back to vinyl, man.
But the thing, I guess, if you with the comparison you just made, though, there hasn't been anything other than a collected graphic novel, unless you go from the newspaper print to the glossy print.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
been
but there
some...
hasn't been a change in format. Like,
yeah, I feel like if we're keeping the analogy going, I feel like the changes in paper format and stuff is like 74s versus 45s versus 33s, 12 inchers.
And there's still people saying go back to newspaper or whatever.
Yeah, I had a conversation once with somebody, and we were talking about in the publishing field, and we were talking about you know, trying to reduce the price of comic books so that it's kind of like hockey and baseball. You can't pay the players what you used to anymore. You can't pay the artists and the writers the horrible wages or the not great wages that you used to. As it stands right now, most creators have full-time jobs at top of their creating, because it's just, you know, it's a lot of work and a lot of effort to make comic books your number one revenue generator as a creator. So even if they went to more, you know, cheaper paper, that cheaper paper isn't that cheaper.
No.
To cut the price of the comic book down enough. So the whole idea of going back to newsprint is over. I mean, it's just, it's not, that's not the key fundamental sort of price hike in comic books anymore.
Even like with some trades and stuff, you know, they used to reprint them sort of on the paper they would have. So if you're reading something from the 80s, it'd be on more newspaper rather than glossy. But now, like a lot of the early 90s Batman reprints are now on glossy.
Yep.
Even though they would have been on the newspaper-ish print. So.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, everybody wants something that lasts a little bit longer. I mean, that newsprint was never meant to be anything more than a disposable paper medium. And it didn't hold ink well. And letterers had to come up with different lettering techniques to sort of bypass some of the horrible print quality that they had and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I just don't think newsprint's coming back. But man, that paper in that homeless dude is nice.
I haven't read that one, but now I'll have to get my hands on a...
Literally, you're going to have to get your hands on it.
And
if Aisha Han's out there, we're coming to get your paper.
Yeah, we need some of those comics, so some buttery comic pages.
Oh, man, it's just I'm you can't tell how badly I'm blushing right now, but man, man, was that paper awesome. Oh well. Anyways.
Yeah.
So yeah, speaking of paper and comics and stuff, because that's what we're doing here today. Superman number 10 came out, and I went bonkers over this cover. I have not seen a cover this cool in, like, all year. And it's just the regular issue. It's got Superman staring down Batman. Batman's looking up at Superman. You got John Kent. I guess they don't call him Kent, though. What do they... What's their name?
You're asking the wrong guy, but...
So Superman's son is there, and Damian Wayne, of course, Batman's son, is there. And the everything about this image, if you don't have it, pull it up on the web. It's Superman number 10, the regular cover. Everything about this image is completely well thought out. Superman's taller than Batman, right? Superman looks a little bit older than Batman, and he looks a little bit older than the new 52 Superman did. So he's got that air of... maturity that the old Superman was missing, right? Batman's biceps are bigger than Superman's. So that shows you that he has to work harder as a non-powered character. He's got to be more fit. He's got to be more muscular to compete with Kryptonians. The smirk on his face as he's trying to stare down Superman, even though Superman's taller than him, you know? And then Damian's got the exact same facial expression as his dad. The exact same facial expression. Because, you know, he's got that chip on his shoulder where he wants to prove himself to his dad all the time.
Yeah.
And then Jonathan's looking down with a little kiddy smirk at Damian, kind of saying, you know, hey, I'm a Kryptonian, at least half Kryptonian. What have you got, little unpowered little punky boy that I'm going to take out? It's just a fantastic cover. It just... screamed at me when I saw this. This is easily, in my books, best cover of 2016, and exactly what the DC Universe Rebirth is all about. Iconic characters acting as themselves, displaying, you know, like, this is just, this looks like Batman. This looks like Superman. This is, you show this image to somebody from the 70s, and they're going to go, that's Superman. That's Batman. You know,
it's who are those kids?
It's not gonna be like, who's the kid in the Superman costume?
Yeah,
you know, who's the goofball that's wearing the weird Batman costume? They'll immediately look at these two guys and go, Superman, Batman, because it's just I don't know. I start gushing about it on the internet, and everybody was again on my case, but it's just a fantastic image. It's just great. It's great. Now, I was never a huge Superman kid growing up. Back when I was reading comic books, Kurt Swan was the principal artist of Superman. And boy, did I catch flack about this on the internet today.
Yeah. I actually didn't see the flack he got, but...
I'm not a huge fan of Kurt Swan.
Kurt Swan's been
drawing Superman since the 50s. He's got a very 50s style to him. It's very clean, very technical. It just looks like a 50s comic book. And then, you know, the other comic books around that time looked the same. But then the 60s happened, and Marvel, with their, you know, Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby and all that other great artists that they had, Neil Adams came along for DC and all of a sudden tilted the camera, the viewpoint of each panel, and more dynamic and more alive. And a late 69 Neil Adams comic does not look like a 1950s DC House comic. And there's reason why everybody was going to Marvel and stuff like this. There's reason why those Marvel books were taking away popularity from DC. And Kurt Swan, to me, personifies that kind of sedate house style. Now, there's a lot of very passionate Kurt Swan fans. And like I said, Kurt Swan is a good artist. He's... you know, it's professional level work. It's just not a style that I like. I like a little bit more zip, more zing.
Yeah.
You know? And this, yeah, well, I got in trouble.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Kurt Swan fans out there. There's a lot.
Now, was this just on?
It was on the book face.
Yeah. On your personal page?
No, I think it was on the Comic Historians page.
No, well, though, of course, if you're on the Comic Historians, yeah, those guys are going to go crazy at you.
Know your audience.
Yeah. It's your own fault at that point.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's all right. I mean, it's just this DC Rebirth is just hitting it out of the park with all of these kind of traditional depictions of the character. Like Superman's not in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt.
No.
Having an existential crisis walking, you know. This is Superman staring down Batman. That's what happens. And Batman not backing down. You know, that's classic to me anyways. So that was kind of fun. I really, really like that cover. I haven't read too much of this week's comics. I know you just got your comics today.
So yeah.
You probably haven't read much today.
I haven't. You know what I have been reading a lot of is actually not current, but I've been reading the Preacher series.
Oh, yeah, right on.
I just finished the first trade.
Yeah, Tweedles gave me the first trade because I actually missed Preacher the first time around.
Yeah.
And I started reading it, and I kind of stopped and I don't know. I'm just not getting into it right now. I'm just too excited about the superheroes and DC Rebirth right now.
Yeah, I kind of like got it. It's funny because like so the first trade is the first 12 issues.
Yeah,
I read like 6 or 7 when the Preacher TV show came out because I was all hyped for it. Then I kind of fell off the wagon a little bit, forgot about it, and then picked it up and finished it. And when I finished it, I looked back at the first issue and I was like, I don't even remember that. Because it's been so long since I read it. Like, it's been probably 6-8 months.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a sprawling story that just seems to be, like, to go all over.
Well, and that's what they're saying, that, like, when they did the Preacher TV show, they intentionally kind of added a prelude. The first season was more like a prelude, introducing the characters, because the comic just kicks right off with the story.
It does, yeah.
So you're going to see that issue 1 through 12 more reflected in season 2 of the TV show, I understand. So that'll be good. I like that TV show.
I've only seen like the first half of the season, but I'm definitely going to buy it, finish it.
Yeah.
Because I liked it. It just ended up something that I wasn't able to watch when it was on.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, yeah.
If it wasn't for a PVR and DVR and TiVo and all that sort of stuff, I'd miss 90% of broadcast TV. It's just the schedule just doesn't allow.
Yeah.
And... But I know Tweedles, you know, Sam's very much a traditionalist, and the comic book is this, and the Walking Dead TV show is violating, and he's not a fan of the Preacher thing because, again, they're deviating from the comic a little bit. But I was raised on DC Elseworlds books, and, you know, where Superman was landed in the Soviet Union instead of Kansas, and Batman happened in England during the Gaslight Ages and stuff. So
yeah.
I'm perfectly fine with, like, an alternative take.
I agree. Like, it's... Just treat it like its own entity, and if you enjoy it as its own entity, that's fine. And if you still don't like it, that's fine, because everybody has their own opinion on the show or whatever. But if you try to hold something up to, like, the standard of the comic book, you're always going to be disappointed.
And it's not like they got rid of the comic book. It's not like they retconned the comic book, took it away from you, and you can't read it again, and the only history is the TV show.
This is just their interpretation.
You can pick up those trade paperbacks and reread them, those original issues, whatever. You can grab them and just reread them. So, you know, you really have nothing to whine about.
No. And just while we're on the topic of Preacher, of course, Steve Dillon passed away late last month.
Far, far, far too early. Age 57.
Yeah, and so DC is doing a double splash page in all of their comics coming out on November 16th with a little tribute to him featuring some of his Preacher artwork.
That's nice. So they did the same thing when Darwin Cook passed. And
yeah.
It's just a classy move. It's nice.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like somebody had to pay DC to put this ad in the comics. They're just doing it, and that's nice.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully they cut off some chunk of change for the widows and the survivors and the characters.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure, like, with the popularity of the TV show and, like, all these reprints and stuff, that's, since he is the co-creator, there should be something coming in, too.
Hopefully his contract's good and solid and protects him.
Do you want to talk about some contracts?
Sure.
Like Chris Claremont's
contract? Oh my gosh, you read this too, didn't you?
Yeah, I read this on Bleeding Cool.
Awesome.
And yeah.
So you want to go ahead or?
Sure. So Chris Claremont is like basically a house writer for DC. He's under contract, Marvel. Yep. He's under contract with Marvel. And they're paying him to not write comics for anybody else because they want him. But they don't want him to write comics. So they're basically saying, hey, we'll pay you a certain amount of money to use if we feel like we need you, but we don't need you right now. And don't write comics for anybody else because you're under contract with us.
Yeah, exactly. So Chris Claremont wrote, you know, arguably one of the largest and best runs of Uncanny X-Men. I think it was like, what was it, issues 94 or 92 to 270-something?
Yeah, something ridiculous like that.
Just crazy. And he's in an exclusive contract with Marvel. So Marvel's paying him a salary. They're covering some health benefits and stuff. And it's an exclusive contract, so he can't work in the U.S. for any other comic book company. But they're not giving him any other projects either. So they're paying him, but he's not producing anything. So really, they're just securing his services to make sure he doesn't write for a competing company.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's a great gig. I wish I had that gig.
Well, yeah, like if you're Chris Claremont and you're happy with that situation, you're laughing.
Yeah.
You know, and he can produce comic books elsewhere in the world, and, you know, the comics are a big industry elsewhere, so it's not like his creativeness is being stifled. He can go out and still produce something if he wants to. He just releases it in Australia or France or Italy, right?
So, yeah, like if he wants to do his own thing.
And this was all kind of discovered by accident. It was just like an interview with him, and he just, at one point of the interview, he said he's under contract with Marvel, and then in another part of the interview, he said that he's in an exclusive contract and can't produce for anybody in North America, and the interviewer and his editor kind of put two and two and three and three together and came out, and this, yeah, like he's being paid not to write DC Comics. That's how it boils down to.
Here's an actual quote from the interview. The interviewer says, are you still working for Marvel? Are you still employed by them? He says, yes. Then the interviewer, do you have any projects coming out? Chris says, no.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and he says that if you want to know why I don't have any projects, talk to the editor-in-chief.
Yeah, that's a question for Axel, he says, referring to Axel Alonso, the editor-in-chief of Marvel.
Now, maybe he's not tremendously happy with this. Maybe he'd rather be producing some comic books for Marvel. They just, you know, he doesn't fit in the plans.
And later on in the interview, they ask about DC, and he says, contractually not allowed to work in comics in the United States other than for Marvel.
Now, if it says United States, I wonder if they can drag him up here to Chapter House. Maybe he can write a Kitty Die issue.
Chris, if you're listening. But that would be cool.
I mean, if you think about it, Die Kitty Die is the exact vehicle for this kind of strange and unusual.
We'll have a Die Kitty Die type, X-Men type.
The uncanny Die Kitty Die.
Yeah.
Die Kitty Die Force.
And speaking of like this interview, so the interview, you can read it on Bleeding Cool if you want to search it up. But Chris also says just straight out like that if the film rights for the X-Men were owned by Disney, X-Men would still be like one of the preeminent comics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this everything that we've said before, but like here's a guy actually in the industry saying it.
Now, mind you, he's just speculating like we did, but there's no way. I mean, X-Men was the property all through the 80s, all through the 90s, you know, in the 2000s. X-Men number one from Jim Lee and Chris Claremont, 8 million copies of that comic were sold. I know this was during the 90s bubble, but still, you know, 8 million copies.
That's
a lot. There's no doubt that the whole reason why Marvel is pushing, you know, sort of subduing X-Men and subduing Fantastic Four while pushing Inhumans and Avengers is the promotion of their own movies. I mean, and you can't really blame them from a profit and loss point of view, from a corporate, you know, capitalist point of view. I understand. But still, like, you know, I just want my X-Men back.
Yeah, I mean, You can't blame them for wanting to make profit, but you can blame them for wanting to make profit instead of making good stories.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, or like literally redoing their entire universe to try to just keep from having to pay for something.
This is what happens when big corporations start to own you. That's just the way it is. That's just the way it is.
And then just, so it was Chris wrote from 94 through to 279.
There you go.
On Uncanny X-Men. Like,
and then afterwards wrote.
He came back for some more. Yeah.
For a while. And...
So that's a mind-boggling amount of comics from one writer in a row.
Now, I used to read, I read most of that.
Yeah.
And I will admit that sometimes the subplots got a little, convoluted and things were getting a little too integrated and stuff. And it kind of a little bit. But it was good stuff. Man, those were good books. I miss that X-Men. I know they're talking about, I'm not following Marvel books as much. I just dropped the rest of my Marvel books. The only one I'm getting is Star Wars. I think Sam Tweedle conned me into getting Hawkeye, so we'll see when the new Hawkeye book comes out, how that works out. But my understanding is X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue are coming back as comic books, so maybe they're going to start doing a little bit more with the X-Men, but I don't know. We'll just see. I don't know. I got some sales figures here that I pulled up, and I'm just looking real quick if there's any kind of Inhumans on here or anything like that, but... Uncanny X-Men is the 64th highest-selling book in September. 64th. It was consistently in the number ones.
Yeah.
Extraordinary X-Men, 70. I don't even see the word Inhuman on here anywhere. So obviously the Inhumans books, what was there? There was the Uncanny Inhumans. There was the regular Inhumans book. They're not on here at all.
Now let's...
This is September sales, September 2016.
Okay. So the top 25, there's only three Marvel titles.
In the top 25?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Amazing Spider-Man, Star Wars, and Civil War II, which was number 4.
There you go.
And there's, in that list, there's one Image, which is Walking Dead, and the rest are DC.
Well, I'm telling you.
That's amazing.
This DC rebirth is resonating. I am literally reborn. I have not enjoyed reading DC comics this much in almost a decade. I'm just loving it. I mean, there's some misfires. The Flash is a really popular book right now, but it's not quite the Flash that I remember. Green Arrow's pretty good. Superman, again, I was never a huge Superman fan. I love the character, but I never really liked the book. But the Superman comic book itself is easily first comic I pull out of the pile every time right now. It's just fantastic. So, it's crazy. Now, there's a lot of number ones here, and I almost always immediately discount a number one in this list.
True, yep.
Because those numbers get inflated.
But so, Trinity, Supergirl, Teen Titans, Rebirth, are all in the top 11 number ones.
Walking Dead, 158 at position 6. That means solid book to me.
Yeah.
Top 10, and it's the 158th issue.
For sure.
And it's consistently up there.
Yes.
Justice League 5 at 10, sure. Star Wars 23 at 15, okay, fine. But the number ones, Trinity, is Trinity going to be at number 7 in issue number 4?
Probably not.
I don't think so. No, it is Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. So, you never know. It might be pretty good.
Or something like Doom Patrol number 1 at 19.
Yeah.
Probably not going to stay there.
Doom Patrol had a lot of curiosity, so I don't know if that'll stay. I read it, and I really liked it.
Yeah.
It had a great Silver Age vibe to it, and it had some hip new stuff in it. So I'm definitely reading that book, so it might be okay. But, Black Panther was proclaimed as this great comic book success and stuff, and it's fantastic. And granted, it's pretty high up there as far as Marvels go. But it's at position 34.
Yeah, the sixth best Marvel comic after two Deadpool comics, Star Wars and Civil War.
Black Panther is outselling Deadpool and the Mercs for money. It's outselling Guardians of the Galaxy. It's outselling Spider-Gwen, Uncanny Avengers, All New Wolverine, which I find surprising, Punisher, Daredevil. So, it is up there for Marvel. It is a successful book for Marvel, but position 34, Nightwing beat it. Titans beat it. Cyborg beat it. Suicide Squad beat it. Supergirl beat it. Now, that is something else that's kind of interesting. If you take a look at the list, there's a lot of, quite obviously to me, a television show success being portrayed here. Like the Supergirl comic is in here. The Flash comic is pretty high. I don't think Flash was ever a top 20 book, and here it is.
Even like the Suicide Squad.
The Suicide Squad from the movie, you know. And on the Marvel side, it's the Spider-Man, you know, the Avengers and stuff like this. Black Panther from the movie.
And like Doctor Strange with the movie coming out.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's interesting to see, but man, to see Marvel consistently not in this list. And I know we talked about this before a little bit, but Marvel coming up with some of these horrible schemes like, if you buy this much of this book, we'll give you this much of this next number one for free. And if you buy that, we'll give you this. And if you buy this, that'll be returnable. So instead of pushing these sales numbers into the hands of collectors and into the hands of readers, they're just trying to push these numbers into the comic shops, and then they'll languish in dollar bins.
Yeah, they're basically just trying to fake sales numbers to get back on top.
And that drives me nuts. That drives me nuts.
For sure.
What is what's the next Image book in the list? Paper Girls.
Which is that, or is it Saga at 55?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Saga at 55. So Walking Dead, Saga, and Paper Girls. Seven to Eternity. I've never read Seven to... Oh, well, it's a number one. So yeah, it's going to have a little bit of a boost there. But I've never read those. Josie and the Pussycats is in here, but I don't think I see Archie in here. Jughead. But did Archie even come out in September?
You'd have to ask Sam. Somewhere yeah. Sam's yelling at us.
And this is
us.
Just the top 90. You know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see, that's for sure. You know, how things are changing and how things are shifting. This is definitely not the chart from 2014, let alone 2015. That was a completely different chart. It looked completely different. Totally different books.
It probably looked more like the second page, because the second page is all Marvel. And yeah. The first page is all DC.
Yeah, like there's only, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There's 11 Marvel books and DC books in the 47 to 90 position. All the rest of them are up at the top. Now, I'm sure if we take the rest of the list, there's going to be some DC books at 100 and at 120. Yeah. And there's going to be some other books like Raven, number one, debuted at 87, which I think for a number one of a miniseries is really low. I don't think that book is screaming up the charts there. But, you know, it is what it is. So, I mean, that's sales. What else have we got there, Dan? Anything else we need to chat about in the last five minutes?
I don't think so. I think we're actually bumping up onto our outro time here.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for this week.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week, and hopefully we'll have a three-man show next week, and away we go.
Hopefully, and now it's time for our snazzy new outro.
Yes.
First, I have to press the button.
That's all right.
All right, here we go.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like the Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway? Thank you.
level check for Eugene Levy CFFF promo. Take three.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Good level?
Yep.
Bobby Bittman here. I always listen to Trent Radio 92.7. I love this guy. I really do.
You do one more of those?
Sure. What was wrong with that one?
Nothing. The level was a little high.
Okay. Hi, this is Bobby Bittman. When I'm in the Kawarthas, I listen to Trent Radio 92.7 FM.